want to have James declared insane?" Helen nodded. "A medical defense is our best shot. And if we establish it right now, it might improve the way they handle him before the trial. He might die. That's what the doctors said. I don't want him to die a criminal. I want to clear his name. He hasn't been tried yet. He hasn't been convicted. He's still an innocent man in the eyes of the law. That's not the same." "No, I guess it isn't." There was another long silence. "Let's meet back here at 10:30, Helen said. "We'll thrash out a strategy. If we're aiming for a change of hospitals, we should try for it sooner rather than later." "We need to find this Jack Reacher person," Rosemary Barr said. Helen nodded. "I gave his name to Emerson and my father."
"Why?"
"Because Emerson's people cleared your brother's house out. They might have found an address or a phone number. And my father needed to know because we want this guy on our witness list, not the prosecution's, because he might be able to help us."
"He might be an alibi."
"Maybe an old army buddy at best."
"I don't see how," Franklin said. "They were different ranks and different branches."
"We need to find him," Rosemary Barr said. "James asked for him, didn't he? That has to mean something." Helen nodded again. "I'd certainly like to find him. He might have something for us, some exculpatory information, possibly. Or at least he might be a link to something we can use."
"He's out of circulation," Franklin said.
He was 2 hours away, in the back of a bus out of Indianapolis. The trip had been slow, but pleasant enough. He had spent Saturday night in New Orleans in a motel near the bus depot. He had spent Sunday night in Indianapolis. So he had slept and fed himself and showered. But mostly he had rocked and swayed and dozed on buses, watching the passing scenes, observing the chaos of America, and surfing along on the memory of the Norwegian. His life was like that. It was a mosaic of fragments. Details and contexts would fade and be inaccurately recalled, but the feelings and the experiences would weave over time into a tapestry equally full of good times and bad. He didn't know yet exactly where the Norwegian would fall. At that point, he thought of her as a missed opportunity. But she would have sailed away soon anyway. Or he would have. CNN's intervention had shortened things, but maybe only by a fraction. The bus was doing 55 on Route 37, heading south. It stopped in Bloomington. 6 people got out. One of them left the Indianapolis paper behind. Reacher picked it up and checked the sports. The Yankees were still ahead in the east. Then he flipped to the front and checked the news. He saw the headline, "Sniper Suspect Hurt in Jail Attack." He read the first 3 paragraphs. Brain injury. Coma. Uncertain prognosis. The journalist seemed torn between condemning the Indiana Board of Corrections for its lawless prisons and applauding Barr's attackers for doing their civic duty. "This might complicate things," Reacher thought. The later paragraphs carried a reprise of the original crime story, plus updated background, plus new facts. Reacher read them all. Barr's sister had moved out of his house some months before the incident. The journalist seemed to think that was either a cause or an effect of Barr's evident instability. Or both. The bus moved out of Bloomington. Reacher folded the paper and propped his head against the window and watched the road. It was a black ribbon, wet with recent rain, and it unspooled beside him with the centerline flashing by like an urgent Morse code message. Reacher wasn't sure what it was saying to him. He couldn't read it. The bus pulled into a covered depot, and Reacher came out into the daylight and found himself 5 blocks west of where a raised highway curled around behind an old stone building. Indiana limestone, he guessed. The real thing. It would be a bank, he thought. Or a courthouse. Or maybe a library. There was a black glass tower beyond it. The air was okay. It was colder than Miami, but he was still far enough south that winter felt safely distant. He wasn't going to have to refresh his wardrobe because of weather. He was in white chino pants and a bright yellow canvas shirt. Both were 3 days old. He figured he would get another day out of them. Then he would buy replacements. Cheap. He had brown boat shoes on his feet, no socks. He felt he was dressed for the boardwalk and thought he must look a little out of place in the city. He checked his watch. 9:20 in the morning. He stood on the sidewalk in the diesel fumes and stretched and looked around. The city was one of those heartland places that are neither large nor small, neither new nor old. It wasn't booming, and it wasn't decrepit. There was probably some history, probably some corn and soybean trading, maybe tobacco, maybe livestock. There was probably a river or a railhead, maybe some manufacturing. There was a small downtown area, he could see it ahead of him, east of where he stood. Taller structures, some stone, some brick, some billboards. He figured the black glass tower would be the flagship building. No reason to build it anyplace else than the heart of downtown. He walked toward it. There was a lot of construction underway. Repairs, renewals, holes in the road, gravel piles, fresh concrete, heavy trucks moving slow. He crossed in front of one and hit a side street and came out along the north side of a half-finished parking garage extension. He recalled Ann Yanny's fevered breaking news recap and glanced up at it and then away from it to a public square. There was an empty ornamental pool with a fountain spout sticking up forlornly in the center. There was a narrow walkway between the pool itself and a low wall. The walkway was decorated with makeshift funeral tributes. There were flowers with their stems wrapped in aluminum foil, photographs under plastic, and small stuffed animals and candles. There was a dusting of leftover sand. The sand had soaked up the blood, he guessed. Fire engines carry boxes of sand for accidents and crime scenes, and stainless steel shovels for removal of body parts. He glanced back at the parking garage. Less than 35 yards, he thought. Very close. He stood still. The plaza was silent. The whole city was quiet. It felt stunned, like a limb briefly paralyzed after a massive, bruising blow. The plaza was the epicenter. It was where the blow had landed. It was like a black hole, with emotion compressed into it too tight to escape. He walked on. The old limestone building was a library. That's okay, he thought. Librarians are nice people. They tell you things, if you ask them. He asked for the DA's office. A sad and subdued woman at the checkout desk gave him directions. It wasn't a long walk. It wasn't a big city. He walked east, past a new office building that had signs for the DMV and a military recruitment center. Behind it was a block of off-brand stores, and then a new courthouse building. It was a plain, flat roof, off-the-shelf design, dressed up with mahogany doors and etched glass. It could have been a church from some weird denomination with a generous but strapped congregation. He avoided the main public entrance. He circled the block until he came to the office wing. He found a door labeled District Attorney. Below it, on a separate brass plate, he found Roden's name. An elected official, he thought. They use a separate plate to make it cheaper when the guy changes every few Novembers. Roden's initials were A.A. He had a law degree. Reacher went in through the door and spoke to a receptionist at a counter, asked to see A.A. Roden himself.
About what?
The receptionist asked, quietly but politely. She was middle-aged, well cared for, well turned out, wearing a clean white blouse. She looked like she had worked behind a desk all her life. A practiced bureaucrat, but stressed. She looked like she was carrying all the town's recent troubles on her shoulders. About James Barr, Reacher said.
Are you a reporter?
The receptionist asked. No.
May I tell Mr. Roden's office your connection to the case?
I knew James Barr in the Army.
That must have been some time ago.
A long time ago.
May I have your name?
Jack Reacher. The receptionist dialed a phone and spoke. Reacher guessed she was speaking to a secretary because both he and Roden were referred to in the third person, like abstractions. Can he see a Mr. Reacher about the case? Not the bar case, just the case. The conversation continued. Then the receptionist covered the phone by clamping it to her chest below her collarbone above her left breast.
Do you have information? She asked.
The secretary upstairs can hear your heart beating, Reacher thought. Yes, he said. Information.
From the Army?
Reacher nodded. The receptionist put the phone back to her face and continued the conversation. It was a long one. Mr. A.A. Roden had an efficient pair of gatekeepers. That was clear. no way of getting past them without some kind of an urgent and legitimate reason. That was clear, too. Reacher checked his watch. 9:40 in the morning. But there was no rush, under the circumstances. Barr was in a coma. Tomorrow would do it. Or the next day. Or maybe he could get to Roden through the cop if need be. What was his name? Emerson. The receptionist hung up the phone.
Please go straight up. Mr. Roden is on the third floor.
I'm on it, Reacher thought. The receptionist wrote his name on a visitor pass and slipped it into a plastic sleeve. He clipped it on his shirt and headed for the elevator, rode it to the third floor. The third floor had low ceilings and internal corridors lit by fluorescent tubes. There were three doors made of painted fiberboard that were closed, and one set of double doors made of polished wood that were opened. Behind those was a secretary at a desk, the second gatekeeper. She was younger than the downstairs lady, but presumably more senior.
Mr. Reacher?
She asked. He nodded, and she came out from behind her desk and led him to where the windowed offices started. The third door they came to was labeled A.A. Roden. What's the A.A. for? Reacher asked.
I'm sure Mr. Roden will tell you if he wants to, the secretary said.
She knocked on the door, and Reacher heard a baritone reply from inside. Then she opened the door and stood aside for Reacher to go in past her. Thanks, he said.
You're most welcome, she said.
Reacher went in. Roden was already on his feet behind his desk, ready to welcome his visitor, full of reflexive courtesy. Reacher recognized him from the TV. He was a guy of about 50, fairly lean, fairly fit, gray hair cut short. In person, he looked smaller. He was maybe an inch under 6 feet and a pound under 200. He was dressed in a summer weight suit, dark blue. He had a blue shirt on and a blue tie. His eyes were blue. Blue was his color, no doubt about it. He was immaculately shaved and wearing cologne. He was a very squared-away guy, no question. As opposed to me, Reacher thought. It was like a study in contrasts. Next to Roden, Reacher was an unkempt giant. He was 6 inches taller and 50 pounds heavier. His hair was 2 inches longer and his clothes were $1,000 cheaper.
Mr. Reacher? Roden said.
Reacher nodded. The office was government basic, but neat. It was cool and quiet. No real view from the window, just the flat roofs of the off-brand stores and the DMV office with all the ductwork showing. The black glass tower was visible in the distance. There was a weak sun in the sky. At a right angle to the window, there was a trophy wall behind the desk with college degree certificates and photographs of Roden with politicians. There were framed newspaper headlines reporting guilty verdicts in 7 different cases. On another wall was a photograph of a blonde girl wearing a mortarboard and a gown and holding a degree scroll. She was pretty. Reacher looked at her for a moment longer than he needed to.
That's my daughter, Roden said. She's a lawyer, too.
Is she?
She just opened her own office here in town.
There was nothing in his tone. Reacher wasn't sure whether he was proud or disapproving.
You're due to meet with her, I think.
Am I?
Why? She's defending James Barr.
Your daughter? Is that ethical?
There's no law against it. It might not be sensible, but it's not unethical.
He said sensible with emphasis, hinting at a number of meanings. Not smart to defend a notorious case. Not smart for a daughter to take on her father. Not smart for anyone to take on A.A. Roden. He sounded like a very competitive guy.
She put your name on her provisional witness list, he said.
Why?
She thinks you have information?
Where did she get my name?
I don't know.
From the Pentagon? Roden shrugged.
I'm not sure, but she got it from somewhere. Therefore, people have been looking for you.
Is that why I got in here? Roden nodded.
Yes, it is. That's exactly why. Generally, I don't encourage walk-ins.
Your staff seems to be on board with that policy.
I certainly hope so. Sit down, please.
Reacher sat in the visitor chair and Roden sat behind his desk. The window was on Reacher's left and Roden's right. Neither man had the light in his eyes. It was an equitable furniture arrangement, different from some prosecutor's offices Reacher had known.
Coffee? Roden asked.
Please, Reacher said. Roden made a call and asked for coffee.
Naturally, I'm interested in why you came to see me first, he said. The prosecution, I mean, rather than the defense.
I wanted your personal opinion.
On what?
On how strong a case you've got against James Barr?